Are you tired of selling kidney for a laptop? Do you need to take notes in your family WhatsApp group without your boss thinking you're not working? Tired of explaining something when you could just draw it and share it? How about that backache? Is it heavy laptop related? Let the Mesa Fundi come to your rescue. Hashtag freedom with Fundi. Attach Microsoft Office for the ultimate experience. Make the shift and upgrade to the Mesa Fundi with Windows 10 Professional. The Mesa Fundi, flexibility reimagined. Available online and in store at all leading retailers. Mesa recommends Windows 10 Professional.
What's going on? I can't travel to Durban and I really need to see the team. Our telephone bill is through the roof, our server crashed and we've lost all our files.
Are you getting frustrated with problems in your business? Win at work and calm the chaos with Vox's intelligent business solutions. Work smarter, not harder, and connect your business to the world from 899 Rand. T's and C's apply. Visit vox.co.za for more information.
I'm Duncan McLeod and this is Tech Central. We have an interesting podcast discussion lined up next. I'm pleased to welcome Ricky Crook, the CEO of VumaCam, to the show. Ricky, welcome. I'm surprised we haven't had you on before. How are things your side?
Yeah, all good. Thanks very much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. VumaCam, obviously a very interesting company. If you live in Johannesburg, you of course would have noticed the company's towers going up all over the city. In fact, I've got one right outside my house here, Ricky. It hasn't got cameras on it yet, but looking forward to it being kitted out hopefully in the not too distant future. How's the rollout been going? Are you still only focusing on Joburg or are you looking at other metros as well now?
So the rollout's been good. So the first thing is, obviously we looked at Joburg as like the incubator to test and, solidify like the model. And the biggest part of the model is really getting, that network effect.
Yeah.
Where you've got multiple cameras, in a high density. So when an incident does take place, that you get enough information to understand, what took place, what is the modus operandi. So once you've got that density of cameras and that network effect, which has already proven, much better than we ever expected in terms of the kind of cases that we've assisted in solving through the ecosystem. So our focus has primarily been on the Joburg side of things. We have ventured into Ekurhuleni and Mogale City. Mm-hmm. We want to then, push into Tshwane, KZN and the city of Cape Town. So those are on our radar to expand, but obviously once we've got the network effect bedded down.
In Joburg, how many cameras do you have? How many poles have you put up so far? And how many of those poles have put cameras on to date?
So we've got just short of 3,000 poles that are put up. So obviously you need to put up your pole and then you get your fiber reticulation and your power and these things, to light up that pole. So we've got 2,700 cameras on the 3,000 poles. Obviously, there's multiple cameras, per pole. So, probably about 50% to 55% of the poles, have been lit up. And then we light in the rest on a daily basis to obviously, get more of that network effect going.
How do you decide where you're going to put up a camera?
A lot of it's primarily driven by demand. So, the local security companies and residents associations that are, working in those areas. We do have a big drive now to cover the main arterial routes, because obviously crime travels. So, people have to come in and out. So like the wider you can get out your bubble and organize, the cameras, obviously the chances of getting some specific information is helps a lot. Effectively we've driven on demand and while we build out, where we think, the most permanent places need to be.
For those that don't know, Ricky, maybe let's take us through how the model works for VumaCam. If you're an ordinary citizen living in Johannesburg, you're not going to get access to those feeds, right? It's security companies that pay for access to those high sites. Maybe just take us through exactly how the model works.
Perfect. So, ultimately, our customers are the security companies. There's over 11,000 security companies, that are registered with CERA. So we also have to, it's not just saying that you're a security company. There's a whole vetting process to which security companies will allow access. And obviously, there's some sort of sensitive information. We'll touch on a bit later in terms of, the privacy and how we how we negate and protect, you know, information that comes through the system. But ordinarily, like the model is really working on security companies, and because we've come from the security world in terms of running security companies previously, we've seen that the next evolution of security is going to be technology. And mm-hmm. you know, with technology that's coming, the obvious choice is cameras. And the challenge that we foresaw is people going and putting up a whole lot of cameras, but if those cameras aren't connected to a centralized kind of system, then everyone's fighting in isolation. So the same criminals that will, you know, affect one security company in an area will affect the next day. But if you don't have that orchestration and that centralization, there's no ways to know that it was the same vehicles, the same perpetrators, the same, you know, modus operandi. So what we really said is, let us go build a platform, business in terms of putting up the infrastructure, connecting the infrastructure, storing it, configuring it, protecting it, putting all your firewalls, getting all your compliances and things in place, and then really, you know, like working on a feet per camera basis to the security companies, who could then take all of, you know, the heavy lifting that we've done and simply just, you know, put a person in front of the screen, use the artificial intelligence or you know, the specific analytics of, you know, that they choose, and understand what's happening in that environment, and then choose to send out a vehicle or a, you know, do something with it, which really gives the guys, you know, that situational awareness to understand what's going on and say, is it a false alarm and we don't need to waste a resource going out? Or actually, are there guys with AK-47s and I need to send, you know, 10 vehicles to try and deal with it? Mm-hmm. So, you know, like in the services space, you don't have engineers, you don't have, you know, guys who understand, you know, infrastructure and configuration and all of these good things, because you're really in an operational kind of business, you know, to deliver a specific service, where we then tag on and plug onto these security companies and assist them from a technology perspective, making their lives a lot easier to deliver that full solution.
You must have some interesting stories to tell, Ricky, about criminal activity in Johannesburg. To the extent that you can you maybe give us a few anecdotal insights for some of the crime, or perhaps some arrests that have been made on the back of the VumaCam network and the surveillance yeah. that's been happening? Yeah.
Perfect. So again, you know, when we talk around the network effect and really the success of it, we've been blown away in terms of how successful the solution and the platform has been. We've got over 48 different security companies that now work with us on our platform and part of that ecosystem. We're seeing multiple arrests on a daily basis. So through our channel partners, you know, by them getting the alert that a suspicious or vehicle of interest has traveled through their area, you know, they are now working closely with SAPS. They verify that is actually still a wanted vehicle. They put it over, call out SAPS and make the arrest. We've seen like very interesting stuff. So I think a week ago we saw one where there was actually an incident in a shopping center in Four Ways. So we don't have the cameras, you know, at the shopping center, but the incident took place. The security company downloaded off one of the garage cameras as the vehicle was exiting, put the registration into our platform, mm-hmm. and 2 days later, where one of their patrol vehicles was patrolling an area, that same vehicle entered into the area. And they got the alert, they pulled them over and they arrested them 2 days after the incident took place.
Fantastic.
You know, so like that's really, it's really a case of, you know, idea is to prevent an incident. And obviously if we can prevent them, you know, from taking place, that's first prize. But obviously you can't prevent everything just because criminals are quite sophisticated. You know, so a big modus operandi that we're seeing is guys would go and clone number plates. So, you know, they'll clone a number plate of the same kind of car that's driving around. So they'll go and see in a shopping center, there's a Merc C-Class. They say, I'm driving Merc C-Class. Let me copy that plate. And obviously they're driving around with clone number plates. So very difficult to detect. You know, so as we go, we're looking to build some algorithms and things to negate that, in terms of like, we can tell now if a car's in two different places at the same point in time. So if you've seen in Linksfield and Ramberg at the same time, it's impossible that you've traveled that distance. Well, then you've cloned that vehicle. So as the sophistication and as the, you know, criminals evolve, because, you know, that's what they do and that's their job to evolve, we have to just be one step ahead of them. And we have to be a lot smarter in terms of, you know, how we can enable the technology so we can curb incidents and crime from taking place.
There's some pretty interesting technology behind the VumaCam system. I have had a brief demo of it in the past, but Ricky, maybe take us through some of the things it can do, because I mean, this isn't just a network of internet connected cameras. There's actually quite a robust, intelligent platform behind it that allows security companies to do some pretty clever stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. So our focus point has really been, you know, like a camera is not the most, you know, well, it's not the most difficult thing to put together. I think like putting it all together to making sure that the foundations of the system are right in terms of the way that you connect to it and the way that you configure. But really what we're looking for, you know, two parts of our business. One is a managed platform to make sure that the camera always works. Because if the camera is not working, well, then your analytics can't work and then your services can't deliver the service. So we talk about managed uptime to make sure that, you know, the camera is always working, the throughput of the fiber, there's enough power and all of those good things. But really where we're getting, you know, very smart is the application layer that sits above it. Mm-hmm. So we look for best of breed analytics. We've chosen an open source video management solution, which really manages video in and video out. And I'm pleased to say that the choice that we've done is the first GDPR compliant video management, you know, solution. So, you know, you have to understand, you know, as fast as the technology is moving, but what protections and belts and braces you can put in place at the same time. But once we choose that, you know, it's quite easy for us to then integrate the best of breed analytics that come in. And obviously our big focus has been around the number plate side of things. So we can tell you, you know, that car linked to the SAPS database has been involved in a crime. We can give you a millisecond kind of response so that car's traveling. We then, you know, looking at make, color and model of vehicle. So now we can, you know, tell you if that car is the same make and model. We're looking at the clone number plate. So that's really around, you know, the data analysis and data mining of, you know, the stuff that's coming through. But then we're also looking at other pieces of like behavioral analytics. So understanding what normally happens in environments and reporting on exceptions. So what that does is that, you know, the software looks at the pixels of the cameras and understands, you know, shape, size, direction, and then reports if something's out of the ordinary. And by doing that, we can probably filter up to 96, 97% of footage that's not necessarily needed to be watched. And alerting on the 3%, which then says something's, you know, unusual, something's happening here. We've got some great case studies, and I'm happy to share some clips with you, you know, where we've got, you know, guys walking the streets and a snatch and grab, you know, they steal your cell phone. And because the guy now is walking past you and you now suddenly change direction, runs, the car door opens, it flags and says, this is unusual. And, you know, and the combination of working together where that's unusual, where the car now goes to the closest corner, we then can look for the number plate on that closest corner. We take the number plate, put it in our system, and we could have up to, you know, 100 vehicles from different security companies and SAPs all now pursuing that same suspect. So it's really like you've got individual pieces of analytics looking for different specific things, but all pulled together in a full solution, which then, you know, is allowing us to get to the desired effect of making these arrests. But again, it's only as good as the ecosystem. So you're only as good as your channel partners and the guys that are operating the systems, yeah, how good their responses are. And I'm pleased to say that, you know, SAPS and JMPD have really come to the party in terms of, you know, adopting a lot of our technology and working closely with us. And, you know, so we really see ourselves as that glue and that foundation between the private sector and the public sector and assisting in that fight against crime.
You must be producing an enormous amount of video every day. I believe all the cameras that you've deployed around Joburg are 4K IP cameras. How long are you keeping the video for?
So we look at, you know, what Poppy, you know, talks around, and it says that you should, you know, keep it for up to 30 days. So at the moment we keep it for 30 days. We have gone so far as, you know, building our own storage capabilities just because of the amount of data. So, you know, you're looking at 5, 6, 7, you know, petabytes of data that flows through our system. You know, so, and what we've learned over time, so you deal with guys who manage big data, but video's like a different kind of data in terms of it's so like richly enabled And it's constant. So it's 24 hours a day. So the amount of data that throws you out, it's fascinating. But I think it's also, you know, it's only possible because of the foundations and because, you know, every pole is connected to fiber. And you know, you've got this, you don't have these contentions, and you've got this throughput that you can, you know, you can send it back into your thing. But we get clever on a daily basis around compression and, you know, different technologies, and do edge processing on the pole versus, you know, in centrally. So as we go every day, we're evolving and we're enhancing the system.
You have your own dedicated fiber inside the Vumatel ducts, do you?
No, so we treat it like a house. Okay. You know, so we'll be seen as, you know, instead of taking a fiber to a house, you're taking a fiber to one of our poles. Mm-hmm. And we you know, so obviously Vumatel is a partner and a shareholder of us in the business, and they, you know, with their massive reach, you know, does assist us, you know, greatly in terms of where we can connect up our poles. But we have managed to connect to other networks. Mm-hmm. So there's probably around 12 to 13 other networks networks that we do connect to. You know, so we're not constrained by only the Vumatel areas. Okay. And we can really prove the full network effect by not just having in your northern suburbs, but we can reach further into townships and into lower LSM kind of areas, so that no one can really get off the grid. So we don't want you to be able to cause an incident and then you disappear. Yeah. The wider we've got, you know, more cameras, gives us more information in terms of how we can assist in arresting those perpetrators.
Is fiber a prerequisite for where you guys go, or could you use other technologies and put up camera systems where, say, there's only LTE available?
Yeah, so that's when I talk around, you know, the processing. So if we're going to process centrally, we do need a fiber connection that comes through. If we're going to do edge processing, we can use an LTE and other means of connectivity. And a use case there is specifically like the Sprite. So, you know, we've had quite a big calling in, you know, in terms of people riding their bikes and running and being mugged. And I think there was actually a shooting, you know, 2 weeks ago on the Sprite. You know, so put up a whole lot of infrastructure, put on-site, processing, put the analytics on-site, and then, you know, come out via an LTE device.
Okay. Good stuff. So Vumatel remains a shareholder. Ricky, the business is yours, right? You came up with the idea for VumaCam originally, then Vumatel got involved. What's the history there?
So we used to have a security company called CSS Tactical.
I remember them, yes.
So we were one of the founders of these, you know, tactical security companies. So you got these military kind of personnel in these big black buckies, you know, patrolling. And, you know, really what we said back then is, you know, to try get the combination of technology and manpower correct. And then trying to stream video through ADSL and Diginet lines was a massive challenge for us, which led us on to fiber. And we then, you know, said, well, we have to roll out a fiber network. And we actually started a business called Fiberhoods. So we were the founders of Fiberhoods, where we rolled out the first aerial fiber deployments, specifically to connect up our camera network. And once the cameras were there, we actually landed up, you know, doing a transaction with Vumatel, where Vumatel bought, you know, the assets out of Fiberhoods and pivoted the business from a build and operate to a build and transfer. You know, and we deployed close to 150,000 homes, you know, for Vumatel on an aerial fiber deployment. And then once we said there's fiber everywhere, we said, well, why don't we now, you know, layer that fiber with a camera network, which we then could, you know, work with and be an enabler to all the different security companies. So it's been quite an interesting path in terms of understanding the challenges that the security providers have, understanding big, you know, infrastructure deployment, and marrying the two in terms of, you know, building this kind of business, which has been a lot of fun. And, you know, and I think it's, you know, we're definitely proving to what we set out to prove. And, you know, every day it actually, the different use cases and what you can do, it just gets bigger every day in terms of, you know, where we're playing and, you know, with our partners. And it's just really exciting where technology is going. But technology, and especially what we're doing, needs to be done properly, and it needs to be done you know, with the right controls and the right processes. And, you know, it's that's why one party doing it really ticks a lot of the boxes in terms of the security companies, you know, can get it cheaper than them doing it themselves. They don't need the balance sheet to write, you know, the CapEx checks. They don't need the, you know, the heavy overheads from the engineers in their businesses. We wrap it all up for them, but at the same time, we can work with, you know, all the different security companies because we don't compete with them at that layer. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's, I think we tick a lot of like boxes in terms of making this like a really successful business.
Let's talk, you alluded to it a bit earlier, and that's the privacy side of things. You're taking high definition footage from across Johannesburg, and no doubt there are going to be concerns from residents about security, about privacy. How have you dealt with those?
So obviously, you know, it's top priority for us. You know, we understand that we are in the public domain. We also understand that, you know, we want to do this in a comprehensive and compliant manner. So we're looking at, you know, global standards in terms of what the technology, and as I said before, you know, we've chosen the first GDPR compliant video management solution. But, you know, we encode and decode and, you know, like really control the information. But the real like macro idea around it is that we don't have any personal information. So if you're driving around, the only way that one of your vehicles is going to land up on an alert list is because you've been flagged on a vehicle of interest and you've been involved in a crime. Mm-hmm. Similarly, with our overview cameras, you know, we're putting in the behavioral analytics to reduce the footage by, you know, as I said, up to 95, 97, 98% in some cases, where you're only left with 2% of something that's unusual. And again, you know, we don't have facial recognition cameras, so we don't have any unique identifiers in terms of, you know, that person is Duncan, he's walking down that road. The same with the vehicle. We can get your number plate if it's, you know, listed against a database, but we don't have any way to say that number plate belongs to you and this is your ID number and this is your... So there's very, very limited, you know, personal information that we do get through the system. And really the way that we see it is we're looking at situational awareness to identify something that's unusual, being, you know, someone running or a car door opening or something happening, or your vehicle has been flagged because you have been, you know, previously been involved in a crime, or someone's cloned your vehicle, or one of these things. And then it's only going to be onto the radar. So, you know, like there's a lot of people have, I wouldn't say hesitancy, or they've got questions around privacy until you actually show them and explain the system to them. And then they become like super comfortable in terms of, you know, the way that we're doing it and the protections and things that we put in place.
Funnily enough, I personally feel more comfortable that it's a private company rolling out this network and not the government or the city of Johannesburg, because you have a profit motive, whereas there may be other motives involved in a state actor rolling out such a network.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's different countries have done differently. I think, you know, it's most globally, you know, smart cities isn't something that's new or unique, but it is primarily all done through government and the public sector. You know, South Africa is a unique place in terms of, you know, the amount of crime that we do have and how large the private, you know, security sector is. And we have to evolve, and we have to take back our streets, and we have to do something about it. So, you know, you want something to be done. You want someone to go and write their own checks. You know, and especially with our shareholders, we need to make sure that we are, you know, super compliant. And you know, there's a huge amount of money that we're investing to make this happen. But ultimately, you know, we think that South Africa is probably the best country to live in if you can sort out the crime levels. And that's something, you know, that we have to do as responsible citizens. And, you know, like, and we think it is achievable. If you can get the buy-in from and everyone to pull in the same direction, and you build the ecosystem. And I think that's the nice thing, is that we're not really stepping on too many toes around, you know, trying to disrupt it. We're disrupting, but enabling, you know, an industry. And together with, you know, the 500,000, you know, private, you know, security guards and SAPs and JNPD, and we can pull that glue and put it all together. We think that, you know, we can really make a big difference.
Yeah. It must be a hell of an investment you guys are making over many years with a view to profitability at some distant point in the future. When are your shareholders expecting a return on their investment?
Yeah, it's one of these debates that we have with our shareholders, you know, and it's something that I think it's, we come from the environment of shareholders understanding big infrastructure and big capital deployments, mm-hmm. And understanding that the returns, you know, do come down the line. But it's something that you need to, you have to have those, you know, you have to have certain wins in terms of understanding that you're getting the buy-in, that you know, that there is a need for it. We change the use cases, you know, quite often in terms of, as I said, you know, I think when we first met you in the Vumatel offices, you know, we had this ambition of the 15,000 camera rollout in Johannesburg. We're now building our systems for 100,000 cameras, you know, in terms of taking in shopping centers and estates and things like that, because, you know, what we're finding is that cameras, you've got a guy who comes and installs a camera and his incentive is to give you a cheapest camera at the most expensive price, because that's the margin that he, you know, he plays in. Where we're saying, well, we'll come from a managed solution. So we actually have to give you the best camera and the best solution at the cheapest price, because, you know, that's how you're going to choose us, but we have to maintain our services. But when you get the combination between, and we call it private, you know, cameras to the public cameras, that you're at a shopping center, you don't want to know when a criminal is at your boom. You want to know 5 minutes before that criminal is at your boom, so that you can have the right resources and tactical teams to deal with it. And you also don't want to have a shootout inside your estate or inside a shopping center. You want to deal with things, you know, as far out as possible. So it now makes sense that we're starting to put these same cameras, and what we've learned around, you know, storage and compliance and configuration applies the same to an existing camera that sits inside a shopping center or inside an estate. Mm-hmm. And we're just saying, well, we'll take over those cameras, we'll put it into our platform, we'll marry it to the public space, and it's all centralized. And, you know, so now the numbers start becoming like really exciting in terms of, you know, dealing with hundreds of thousands of cameras, but again, dealt with responsibly, it's compliant, it's structured, you can report on it correctly. And the last thing you want to do is, especially sitting as a, you know, one of these homeowners associations or management agents, whatever the case might be, and an incident happens and you can't give them footage, it starts becoming a real big challenge, where you can have a reliable party who've got network monitoring tools. You can tell you, for, you know, it's the frame rates aren't correct, or there's a problem, or there's an issue. Mm. And within a couple of hours, we can have a technical team to resolve it and make sure that, you know, if an incident does happen, or when an incident does happen with the amount of crime that we are seeing, you know, you've got that footage and you can actually understand what took place.
Okay. So am I understanding you correctly? And you're saying you're talking to, say, shopping mall owners to take over their existing CCTV cameras and onboard them onto your platform?
Correct.
Okay.
So we'll, you know, because, and again, we're just a platform business. So mm-hmm. we'll then put it onto our platform. We'll give you this managed, you know, uptime. We can, and then we can then build on the intelligence to tell you. And it's been quite interesting now, with obviously given with COVID, you know, we start building like a social distancing awareness or mass detection. You know, so like, because it's all in our platform and because the way that we've designed it, it's quite easy to find analytics and plug it in, and it's already configured and set up. And within a matter of hours, we could, you know, get that site with a new application running quite quickly.
Out of curiosity, have you had any criminals targeting your cameras?
So, yes, we have. we don't know if it's specifically for the camera feed to not be seen on camera, or for some of the equipment that's housed, you know, within the environment. We've seen guys go so far as, you know, like literally cutting down the pole. So obviously it's an interesting place we live in, but this is how we adapt and evolve. And but I think that the major thing is different with our infrastructure is that we work closely with the local security company. So there's always a car that's present and close by. And because of the behavioral analytics, we can see something suspicious, you know, early on, and you get a vehicle out pretty quickly. So we haven't, you know, when I say it's very few and far between, but it's definitely something that we're very aware of.
So if some guy's chopping down your VumaCam pole, you'll notice it on the cameras because the cameras start shaking, for example.
Well, correct. Or you'd see the guy walking up with
bolt cutters, with
a chainsaw.
These criminals in this country. Let's talk a bit more about crime, Ricky, before we wrap up. We've just been through levels 5, 4, and now in level 3 of lockdown. We've seen the police minister talking about the sharp drop in crime during this period. Have you seen a similar sort of trend through levels 5 and 4? How much did crime actually fall by in Johannesburg? And what's happened since then?
So level 5 was fascinating for us. So we really saw crime reduce dramatically. We had, where we would get reports of crime, maybe hourly, there was a couple of days or weeks that we didn't hear of any incidents taking place.
Good grief.
So, specifically because, there's not a lot of movement, there was high visibility of police and military onto the roads, that combination led to very difficult for criminals to operate and specifically not finding any targets, but also being one of very few vehicles on the road. I've been in the security industry for the last 15 years, and there's almost never been a day that goes by that you don't hear of some sort of incident. And where we went for 10, 12, 15 days without hearing of incidents taking place. As soon as you open up, there's a lot more fluidity of vehicles and people moving around. We saw a huge increase in cell phone snatching. So we saw, because people were only allowed to do exercises between 6 o'clock and 9 o'clock, we saw that high concentration of people out in the roads, making it quite easy targets for guys to cell phone snatch and take your rings and your phone and whatever it is and get away with it.
And do you catch those on your cameras?
So we have seen instances where we catch it on the cameras. I'll give you one of my shareholders was actually, his wife was walking on Saturday and was involved, it happened to her on Saturday afternoon, and quite quickly, we got the registration, we put it into the system, and we found that the guys, used that vehicle specifically for that incident. So they drive around with a white Toyota Corolla, they cloned another set of vehicles registration. They used that incident. As soon as they moved into Melrose, they must have stopped in a park or somewhere, changed the plates, and you don't see them again. So, it happened very, very quickly. Obviously, that's now put it into our vehicle of interest. But, it's these things are happening daily or multiple times a day. And it's a challenge. I'm saying you're walking around with an expensive device in your hand, that someone can resell pretty quickly, and you can move it around. So, it just becomes a very easy target to attack. And then we see as the levels open up, you're now seeing that more people are still at home. So you see like the courier companies are delivering more into the houses. So they become a massive target. Mm-hmm. So you talk to the courier companies, and they're talking about daily incidents where. And it's actually, it's their drivers are involved, and their drivers are nervous to be driving around because they, become a high risk target. But at the same time, you're driving to someone's driveway and you're now opening up risk to that homeowner at the same time. And you've got your brand, associated to it. So, there's a lot of knock-on effects in terms of, how this affects. Cash and transit's also been a massive issue. So we've seen lots of cash and transits, taking place. And I think, As we move with more people under pressure, more jobs that have been lost, we're going to just see crime increasing more than we've ever seen before.
Mm. So under level 3, is it back to is it as bad as it was before the lockdown started?
Yeah, definitely. So level 3 is we're not seeing any signs of the levels now playing a part in terms of having an impact against crime. We're now seeing crime back to where it was, plus more because of the situations that people are in.
Okay, and do you think are there any lessons we can learn about dealing with crime through this lockdown? I mean, you mentioned the cloned license plates, for example. It strikes me as an obvious thing to crack down on is the ease with which people can get new number plates printed. Is that a problem?
It's a huge problem. You could walk into a shop, and we know, several different shops that take place where within, 25 minutes, you can give them a plate and it's made up and you can have it on your vehicle and you're up and running. So, you know, we definitely need to start understanding like the cause of, you know, these things that are taking place. A big thing as well is, you know, like who's buying the cell phones from the guys that are snatching them. Mm. Let's get to the root cause around, you know, who the buyer is so that you can try and deal with it at that, you know, at that level. I think it's always been for us, you know, a visibility kind of, so it, you know, crime really works like, and crime prevention works in like a water bubble. So the more effort and more emphasis you put in a specific area, you see it just, you know, displacing because, yeah, you know, there was high visibility in terms of JMPD and SAPS and military onto the roads. You know, we saw that having a big impact against, against crime. I don't think it's sustainable. And, you know, it is a challenge because there's other places and, you know, the guys need to focus on. Mm. But, you know, just learning from that in terms of, you know, where roadblocks were taking place and the amount of stop and searches and the high visibility, we saw that, you know, obviously you're making a big impact on the crime levels. Mm.
Very good to chat to you, Ricky. Ricky Crook is a CEO of VumaCam. Thanks so much for sharing your insights with Tech Central.
Perfect. Thanks for having me.